Blog Talk Radio.
Well, it's the new era, and we have a new Impact Heavyweight Champion. I am PWTorch.com's Mike McMahon with PWTorch.com's Andrew Socek. This is the Impact post-game show on the PW Torch livecast for Thursday, March 9th, 2017. Andrew, how are you tonight?
Mike, I'm doing well, a little intrigued, a lot disappointed. I don't know quite know how to feel right now.
Yeah, we'll run down this show here. You can give us a call at 515-605-9345 to talk about this week's episode of Impact. I have some things that I really liked, and I have some things that I really, really didn't like. I guess let's start with this, because this seems to be the theme. Going through social media as I was following the show tonight, the big thing that a lot of people seem to dislike, and I was certainly on the side of this as well, was no one really liked the three-man announce booth. And while I want to be fair and I want to give it time, I thought Josh Matthews was annoying before. Oh, my God. I mean, that was hard to listen to, and not in a good way. It wasn't good heat like, oh, Josh Matthews is a heel. I want to, you know, at some point see him get beat up. Like, no, I wanted to turn my television off. I couldn't take it. What were your thoughts on Jeremy Borash being added to the announcement, which, by the way, I have no issue with. Like, give me Jeremy Borash and someone else as a two-man team. I think it'd be great. What were your thoughts on his addition to the announced team and just how the whole thing played out with Josh Matthews bringing the obnoxious level up to about a million?
Yes, I agree with you. And social media, that was, I don't know if this is hyperbole, but I cannot remember a night I was more annoyed with announcers ever. And that includes heel Michael Cole. I was driving me crazy all night, just their constant bickering.
It was hard to listen to. And even Jeremy Borash, to a certain extent, who, I like. I think he'd be fine as the play-by-play voice. He's been there for a while. I think, you know, Impact fans would respect him as the voice of the show. But the bickering, the back and forth, the constant arguing, like I lost count how many times I sat here and just, you know, yelled "shut up" at my television. Like I just don't want to hear it, you know. And they're in it. They're interrupting like important parts of the show. You've got new people debuting. There's matches going on. And the story is these two guys just yelling at each other. I thought it really took away from some of the good things that they were doing. And honestly, like at times, it just made the show hard to watch.
Yeah, if I was Reno Scum, I would be pissed. Like, that's my introduction to the world, you know, a nationwide show. And just they could not have cared less about that match. It was just all about yelling at each other, telling each other to shut up. And it was just mind-bogglingly awful that they didn't even, like, go back and post-produce some of that stuff. I can't believe that made it to air.
And that's the thing, too. I mean, that was a big deal that you got this debuting tag team that beats the DCC, who's been a big part of your show over the last several months. They beat them in, like, 2 minutes. And it gets completely glossed over by the fact that these two guys are screaming at each other the whole time about no one cares about what the moves are called and everything else. It just... Oh, I hated everything about it, and I want to be fair, you know, and give it time and see how it plays out, but I just thought the whole thing was terrible and really took away, like I said, I thought it took away from some of the good things that they were doing. So let's, before we get to your phone calls at 515-605-9345, let's go through the show. They started the show with Jeremy Borash being introduced to the announce booth. He got a little bit of a promo on Josh Matthews, and I thought that Borash's promo here was okay. I mean, this sort of started the bickering and whatnot, but I thought that Borash's promo here was pretty good, where he talked about Mike Tenay being his mentor and how he was trying to groom him for that position. Overall, I was okay with sort of the message here. I wasn't, you know, like we said, I wasn't okay with where it evolved into, but I thought that this promo from Jeremy Borash to open the show was all right.
Yeah, I like that they kind of tied that into basically saying he's the real successor to Mike Tenay, who got a pretty good pop from the Impact Zone, and, you know, bring in Jim Ross. Originally, even before that started, I really liked the opening video that they put together, and it got me excited, thinking that, you know, Jeff Jarrett's, you know, he's back, and he's he loves his brand, he respects it. And then it by the end, I think, of this Jeremy Borash promo, I was already a little bit down because I felt it just went on a few minutes too long for me.
And the one criticism I would have is, like I said, I think it was a little long, and this sort of was the launching point for what was going to end up, you know, translating over the course of commentary throughout the whole night as well. From there, Reno Scum made their debut, and like we said, they beat the DCC in just about 2 minutes. If this was treated better by the commentators, I think it would have felt like a bigger deal. But this sort of felt like they were just throwing this out there for a one-shot type of thing on TV, and you know, it almost made it feel like, you know, Reno Scum was there for one night only. They didn't really go into, for me, they didn't go into enough about who these guys were, what their background was. Jeremy Borash was trying to, and Josh Matthews was yelling over him the whole time, but I thought that this is where the announcers started to lose me, and this is where they could have done a better job explaining who these guys were. Because like you were saying, I mean, that's a big win over a team that's been a big part of the show.
Yeah, agreed. They brought out, this was one of the many minor things of the show I was just thought was kind of confusing. They brought out some titles. I can't remember the promotion they said they were from, but it was just such a weird thing. Like, are these TNA guys? Are they just going to be here for a little bit? And I was a little surprised, too. Like, DCC was actually, they seemed like they were over with the crowd. And there's a lot of people in the audience wearing those masks. So to me, it says they probably shouldn't have been burying these guys for the past few months.
Yeah, and they also teased some dissension there in DCC as well. After the match, Bram and Kingston seemed to be yelling at James Storm, almost upset that he didn't interfere. So that they're teasing some tension there within that group. From there, Sienna cut a promo on Allie, saying that Maria had a nervous breakdown after last week, and that's probably how they're going to write her off the show. After that, Braxton Sutter won an X Division 4-way match over DJZ, Marche Rocket, and Caleb Conley. Allie was with Braxton Sutter in this match and actually hit a move, a dive on Marche Rocket off the turnbuckle to the outside of the ring. It certainly seems, though, that Braxton Sutter, he was the only one to get a ring entrance here. All three other guys are in the ring. It certainly seems as though he's the guy they're going to try to build this X Division around.
Yeah, it came across to me that way, too, which is disappointing that Zema Ion wasn't focused on. I was disappointed that, you know, last week Trevor Lee and Andrew Everett had a great match, and they weren't even mentioned this week. And I guess the big thing is that over and over again, people are wanting the X Division to be taken seriously. And if this is like the first impression of the new era, I think it was pretty bad of indication of how things are going to play out.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I would have liked to see them mention the champion there. And also, you know, we'll see when it happens, but it looks like Sutter will challenge Trevor Lee for that title at some point. And that should be a pretty good match. I mean, I think that those guys could do some good things together. Although I would like to see Andrew Everett and Trevor Lee have a couple more matches working in their way, maybe some stipulations here at some point after what we saw last week. From there, Sienna beat a debuting Rachel Ellering. I thought that, and I don't recall if it was Borash, I think it was Jeremy Borash, who was doing a pretty good job explaining who Rachel Ellering was. Yeah, it was, because Josh Matthews says he didn't know who Paul Ellering was. Anyway, Jeremy Borash did a pretty good job here explaining who Rachel Ellering was, who her dad was, her background. I like that they included that she was trained by Lance Storm. She doesn't get the win here over Sienna, but I thought she looked pretty good in this match, and I think that as they try to infuse some new talent into the show, she could be someone that the Knockouts division can do something with.
Yeah. It was kind of hard to tell for me because I think she only went 2 or 3 minutes in that match, but she I thought she looked fine. I think this is really where it hit me of like, oh my God, please stop Borash. And, you know, he said like, oh, she's from Minnesota, where I'm from. And then Matthews goes, shut up. Nobody cares where you're from. Just like completely buries the story he's trying to tell of Rachel Ellering. So it was hard for me to be invested in any form just at that point.
No, I agree. And that goes right back to the tag team match earlier. I mean, completely, you got a new talent debuting and they just completely gloss over it because the announcers are going to bicker. And the thing that's the most frustrating about this is it's not a new concept. I mean, WWE did this 6 or 7 years ago, whatever it was, and it didn't work. I mean, people hated it, and not in a way that they hated Michael Cole because he was a heel. They just hated the whole concept. It was annoying to listen to. And why anyone thinks that all of a sudden, 6 years later, this is literally the same thing. I mean, there's no real difference to it other than instead of just Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler, you got a third guy there. But it's the same concept, and it stunk then, and it stinks now. And like I said, it's glossing over, you know, some of the good things they did on the show, I thought. From there, Alberto El Patron makes his TNA debut, along with Bruce Pritchard, who made his TNA debut. Bruce Pritchard cut a promo and said that the TNA name is dead. They're going to go by Impact Wrestling from here on out. I guess before we get too much into the segment, what do you think of dropping the TNA name and using Impact as the name you're going to go with moving forward?
That is a huge hit for me. That name should have never been conceived in 2002. I'm fine. Yes, absolutely. It should be gone. I'm glad somebody killed it. As an aside, I don't want to see Jeff Jarrett every week, but I feel that was his spot to kill the name and then walk away. It just seemed very strange to me that it was Bruce Pritchard of all people to make that announcement.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I wonder because of that, is this, and again, we don't get into spoilers on the show and I haven't read them. Is this Jeff making a real concerted effort to not put himself on television because he's seen as the guy in charge? But I do agree that, you know, if he was going to be on TV for any reason, this was definitely the spot for him to be there. I like the idea of killing the name. Like you said, it was a bad name to begin with. I was listening to a podcast earlier this week, and it may have been Lance Storm and Cyrus's podcast on Podcast One, where I think they were talking, I think it was, and I could be wrong, I think it was Cyrus who was making the point that he would like to see them go with even a different name than Impact and come up with a new name altogether. I'm not sure that that's really necessary. I think Impact works. They've been Impact, the show's been Impact Wrestling for long enough that I think this makes it probably an easier transition. I don't think there's any of the stink on the Impact name that there was on the TNA name either. So I think that you can move forward with this name and have it be okay. I don't think you need to get into something completely different and totally change the name of the whole show.
Yeah. I just like initials. So maybe it would have been nice if it was like, I don't know, Impact Wrestling Federation or Impact Championship Wrestling, something like that. But that's just a small gripe on my part. But anything is good to get rid of TNA for me.
Later on in the segment, Alberto El Patron, he makes his debut. Bruce Pritchard, who never really said what his role was, but it certainly feels like he's a commissioner, some type of authority figure type role. He was out at the end of the show, too, which we'll get to in a minute. But he arranges a world title match for later on in the show between Bobby Lashley and El Patron. I was okay with this. I mean, I'm not usually a fan of them automatically taking the old WWE guy and giving him a title shot right away. I was okay with it here because at least this guy was a former WWE champion. You know, no offense to Cody Rhodes, but Cody Rhodes was never a world champion in WWE. All of a sudden he walked in and got a world title shot. Alberto Del Rio, as he was known back then, at least had world title runs in WWE. So I was okay with it here, but the one thing, my one dislike of this segment was the fact that they set it up at 9 o'clock and the main event ended up starting, you know, 30 minutes later. That takes me out of it a little bit from a realism standpoint. But what did you think of this segment and setting it up with Alberto El Patron as the title challenger right here on night number one.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. Yeah, usually the same. I don't like former WWE guys coming in, but people saw Patron or Del Rio as being underutilized in WWE, so I think there was more support for him than a lot of guys that come in. And yeah, it probably would have been a better way to just start the show with Del Rio coming out as opposed to Borash and Matthews yelling at each other for 10 minutes, but I guess they had to work that in somehow. So yeah, I didn't love it, but I thought it was interesting enough.
I agree with you. I think this would have made more sense at the beginning of the show. You can get Bruce Pritchard out at the beginning of the show, announce that, you know, officially TNA is gone, it's now Impact, get all that out of the way early. It felt a little weird to have this thrown right in the middle of the show, not only because, okay, you just got through, you know, an hour of your program with the TNA name still being active, I guess, but you also set up your world title main event on about 20 or 30 minutes notice, which felt really, really rushed. After this segment, they went in. They came back from a commercial break, and Dutch Mantel was out on the stage, and he cut a promo. So this is two promo segments in a row, but Dutch Mantel cut a promo, which I was okay with. But Andrew, I'm interested in your thoughts on this because I felt that this promo was a little strange. They had been going out of their way, and this promo included, they had been going out of their way all night to really bury the old regime and the old owners. They weren't naming Dixie Carter by name, but, I mean, they were going out of their way to put blame on her and to bury her. And you know what? From what I understand, it's completely deserved. It felt a little out of place here. This promo, I guess, just felt a little out of place, where Dutch Mantel talked about how they need to make Impact great and the fans are who's going to make it great, and he's only there to work for the fans. It just, I don't know. It didn't feel like it served much of a purpose to me, other than to try to generate some goodwill with the audience, maybe. And I'm not sure that that's really going to work here.
Yeah, I like Mantel and Doug Coulter in WWE. I thought he did some pretty solid work. This, I agree, was weird. I also don't really care. Not to get like overly political, but you know, on the front of his little, I can't think of the name of it, whatever he was writing, it says, you know, make Impact great, and he kept talking. Let's make Impact great. That's only going to bring up images of Donald Trump in people's minds, and I don't know if that's something they really want to keep tying into and hammering over and over and over again. So it was just weird for me because he also like buried his, I'm not Zeb Coulter, and then yet he still did the We the People thing that came from him in Jack Swagger. So yeah, weird and too long, I would say.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and I like Dutch Mantel, and I think it's good that he's involved in the company and doing things creatively. But this did feel a little weird for sure. What did you think of the number of WWE references on this show? That was another theme as commercial breaks. There was a lot of complaints from people about the number of WWE references. I don't particularly have a problem with it. I mean, we're not 1995 anymore. I mean, what are we going to pretend like they don't exist? I mean, they're the number one company in the world with 90% of the market share. I don't think referencing them is necessarily a bad thing. If anything, I think especially with a guy like El Patron, it actually helps. You know, hey, we've got a former WWE World Champion. Maybe they overdid it a little bit because it did feel like they were referencing WWE a lot. But what were your thoughts on them just doing it at all and bringing up those WWE references? Because it was much more on this show than anything. I mean, they probably referenced WWE more on this show than at any point in the last 2 years combined.
Yeah, I didn't mind it. I think in key areas it helps, like saying Del Rio's a 7-time champ or whatever that was. That makes him feel more prestigious and like, you know, what's he doing here? What's he going to accomplish? And also, I think it's okay to take the occasional dig for things that are ridiculous that WWE does. Like Josh Matthews said, like, this isn't SmackDown. We don't have 47 announcers here, which is probably his only decent line of the night. So stuff like that works for me. But I'm assuming it's not something they're going to do on a weekly basis, but I guess we'll see how that goes.
Unfortunately for Josh, I'd rather listen to those 47 announcers than him screaming.
Yep.
From there, they move on to a segment where, I mean, it looked as though this is how they're going to write off the Hardys. Matt and Jeff Hardy were wrestling Smokin' Joe Frazier, the kangaroo. And I only got one more week of this. I can't get through it without chuckling. Matt and Jeff Hardy were wrestling the kangaroo in Matt's backyard or in his zoo. Then they try to have Vanguard 1 teleport them to their next destination for their expedition of gold. And all of a sudden, Decay shows up, and they teleport into the backstage area at the Impact Zone. They pick up the tag titles. Abyss yells that it worked. And Rosemary says that the Hardys have been deleted. So it looks like this is how they're writing off the Hardys. The storyline ends with somehow Decay interrupting the teleportation, and I don't know if they're the tag team. I guess we'll find out whether or not they're the tag team champions, but they just sort of took the belts and left.
Yeah. Okay, so in one way I like this. I like that they wrote the Hardys out. I think like a month ago we were talking about how they never wrote Billy Corgan out. He just disappears, and that happens all the time. However, that's the weirdest probably title change in the history of TNA. Like, I sometimes look at Wikipedia and look at title changes and say, oh, so-and-so had to forfeit the belt because there was a crooked ref. But this is like DK somehow caught them while they were teleporting. I don't know. It's not for me. And then this just him brawling with the kangaroo, that was definitively like, okay, this is fine. I'm done with this. That footage is something you put on your YouTube channel and 30,000 people watch it. You don't put that like on national TV. It's just not for me anymore.
I agree. I mean, I know we talked about it last week and I said, hey, you know what? I'm starting to get over this. It's just, I don't know if it's because I knew they were on their way out or what, but I thought the segment last week was just okay. It was just really redundant and it was the same stuff. And it seems like, you know, this segment here, they were filming that, and I'm sure there was more footage filmed after that, because if they had stayed with the company, this would have kept going. This was all stuff they'd done before. I mean, the whole kangaroo thing they did, I think it was at one point over the summer. So it doesn't change my mind that this wasn't, you know, getting redundant and getting a little old because they were just doing the same stuff again. But I agree with you. You know, it's sort of cemented and just reinforced with me that, yeah, you know what, this has probably reached its end. And maybe that's why, you know, maybe that's why Jeff Jarrett and people in charge of TNA decided to move on. You know, maybe they saw some of what was filmed moving forward and said to themselves, you know what, like, got no more legs.
Yeah, I mean, if he's just going to fight a kangaroo again and go talk to zoo animals for the sixth time, I'm totally fine with you're not agreeing to creative control to their contracts. They were great at times, but they had great star power, great energy, but I don't want to see them brawl with a kangaroo.
Yeah, neither do I. And then the main event, Alberto El Patron beats Bobby Lashley to win the Impact World Championship. That's what they called it in the ring introductions. Rockstar Stud, by the way, the ring announcer for this show. We'll see if he continues to be Aaron Rex's lackey, but you know what? I thought Rockstar Spud, on a side note, was a pretty good ring announcer.
Yeah, that was another weird thing that struck me, the fact that they, like, he was sitting in the background in one of the opening shots, and I was just like, what's he doing? And they didn't even bother to say that was Rockstar Spud, and he's moved into a new thing. I'm fine with them dropping that angle with Aaron Rex, but I think I would have, I guess, at least liked one segment of closure to explain what he's now doing.
No, that's true. That's true. And then from there, so like we said, Alberto El Patron wins the Impact World title. This was a really good match, I thought, and a fun match. You know, 18 minutes or so they went. The match ended with some controversy that I'm sure will be revisited next week with multiple referees involved, and El Patron uses the title that Lashley brought into the ring to end up scoring the win and winning the championship. The show did go off the air, though, with nothing decided, and El Patron was on top of the stage with the world title raised above his head to go off the air. So the way, as far as we know right now, and again, we don't get into spoilers on this show, as far as we know right now, Alberto El Patron is the new Impact World Champion. I was okay with this decision. Like we were saying earlier, you know, usually TNA has a history of just throwing the WWE guy in the world title match. But at least this is a guy that is a former world champion, not only in WWE, but he has a long history in Mexico. This is a guy that's known, you know, around the world. I was okay with them doing this quickly, and I'm okay with him winning the world title. We'll see what the follow-up is, though, because it certainly seems like there's going to be some with that type of controversial finish.
Yeah, good match. I'm curious to see where it goes. It does kind of bring me back to, like, Kurt Angle coming in and immediately going over Samoa Joe, Rob Van Dam coming in and immediately going over AJ Styles. I think at this point, Bobby Lashley is more of a TNA guy to a lot of people than he is a WWE guy. So, personally, I think, I guess I wish they would have booked this a few months out in advance or, you know, down the line. But I almost wish Lashley would have won. Del Rio would have then said, like, wow, I had no idea what I was getting into. The guys here in Impact are legit. I'm going to train my butt off and then come back and get that title just to really put over the company. But maybe they'll come up with something good here. I mean, if nothing else, it brings some excitement and news to Del Rio winning the belt.
Yeah, you know, at first I thought, okay, maybe you could have done this. Like, as the show's happening, I thought maybe you could have done this a little differently and have Del Rio fight EC3 in a number one contenders match before you throw him in the title picture. But if you want to put him in the title picture right away, then you'd have to put him over EC3 and then potentially put him over Bobby Lashley. So then you'd be bringing him in and beating two of your quote-unquote TNA guys right out of the bat. You know, right out of the gate. So I think this, in a weird way, protects EC3 a little bit because it at least gives him now an opportunity for a title shot. I think this opens up some different roads for them to take, for them to go down. And I like that. I would rather, if he was going to become world champion, if that was the idea, I would rather him only beat Lashley and save the EC3 match for him challenging for the world title at some point without them ever having touched before that.
Yeah, no, you make a good point there. I mean, ideally I would have like a secondary level heel for him to beat in his first night in, but there's nobody really that level that would be an exciting matchup. So they kind of had to do something big with them. And I'm curious to see how it'll play out in the future weeks.
Absolutely. All right, well, that runs down the show. We're going to take your calls on this week's episode of Impact at 515-605-9345. We'll do that, though, right after our first timeout and our first break. Going into our first break, Andrew brings us our trivia questions again, and these ones are Jeff Jarrett-focused because Jeff Jarrett is back in control of TNA. And our first question of the week, Bound for Glory, TNA's version of WrestleMania. How many of those shows has Jeff Jarrett main evented? The answer to that trivia question and your phone calls on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Impact post-game edition of the PW Torch Livecast.
If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com.
All right, back here in the PW Torch livecast. Andrew, how many main events, how many Bound for Glories has Jeff Jarrett main evented?
Believe it or not, it is only two. 2005 and 2006, he went after Rhino at 2005 in a five-minute match, and then Sting the next year. I probably would have guessed like five or six off the top of my head, but no, only two for Double J.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by that, too. Like you said, he'd been there for so long and was such a central part of the creative for such a long time. I would have guessed, there's been almost 15 of them at this point. I would have guessed at least four or five, you know, at the very least. I was a little surprised that it was as low a number as it was.
Yeah, I think Sting has four and then Angle has three. And otherwise, that's pretty much it. And there's no, like, real legacy guy with, you know, like a Hulk Hogan or John Cena type run.
All right. Well, let's go to the phone lines at 515-605-9345. Again, the number is 515-605-9345. Kylan in New Jersey, you're our first caller of the week. How are you tonight, Kylan?
I'm very well, Mike. How are you and Andrew doing this week?
Pretty good.
Pretty good, I think.
That's good.
What do you got for us tonight, Kylan?
Well, personally, I would like to make a comment regarding, gosh, I almost hate to say this, but Josh Matthews.
Oh, boy.
You said that with such joy.
No, I really do hate to say his performance was absolutely dreadful tonight. It was almost like a reverse version of Paul Heyman. His performance was so bad, I left this show thinking that if as nice of a guy as Josh Matthews probably is in real life, if he never worked again, I would be one of the happiest people on earth.
I mean, I don't know, Andrew. I don't disagree with you, Kylan. I mean, I did not like it at all.
Yeah, it was... Yeah, if I didn't have to listen to the show for this and other writing, I think I would have turned off the audio just for 10 minutes or so. I was going crazy.
It was giving me a headache, Kylan. I'm sure it sounds like it was doing the same for you.
Yeah, almost. On to slightly more positive things. My first question for this week concerns Impact's domestic television contract. And this will go in two parts. First part of this question, do you know when Impact's deal with Pop TV comes up, and with the recent announcement that Spike TV is being renamed the Paramount Network, I assume by January 1st, and with Jeff Jarrett recently meeting with the senior vice president of Spike, and I assume he will be the senior vice president of the Paramount Network when that change is official. Do you think that if Impact manages to get better ratings on Pop, that the Paramount Network will consider taking a fresh look at Impact for future programming for Paramount Network?
That's a very good question. To answer the first part of your question, I believe Pop's and TNA's contract with Pop TV expires at the end of this year. So they've got some time left, about 9 months left on that deal. I don't know. I mean, I was reading some of the same stuff you probably were, that the old Spike vice president, I'm drawing a blank on his name, but he was backstage at the Impact tapings last week. There was a report out there that there was nothing to it. I'm sorry?
Scott Fishman,
that's his name, yep. There was a report out there that there was nothing to that. He was just visiting friends. He lives in Central Florida and knows a lot of the people from TNA from when Spike carried the show. I mean, I don't know if there's really nothing to that. I mean, the guy's backstage. He has a network, or he's running a network. You've got Jeff Jarrett, who had a previous relationship with Scott Fishman when TNA was on Spike before. I mean, it could be a natural fit. And you got to remember, too, it seemed at the time that Spike's biggest issue with TNA was the people running it, Dixie Carter included. And those people aren't running it anymore. So if their biggest issues were with the people in charge, well, now you got new people in charge. So would they revisit a possible relationship? I mean, I don't know, but you would think that that possibility would be on the table. Andrew, what do you think of that? I mean, I don't know if you read that Scott Fishman was back at the Impact tapings last week, but I mean, I certainly think network, if it's of similar clearance to Spike, I mean, it seems like it would just be them rebranding, would be supremely beneficial for TNA to get back on a network of that size.
Yeah, I'd like to see it. When they were on Spike, they actually gave him a lot of money. I think they helped him sign guys like Kurt Angle and Sting, and the show just looked better, looked brighter. There was fireworks and stuff like that. It just looked slicker at the time. But I think the big issue is, I haven't read a lot into what Paramount is going to be. Back when Spike had TNA, it was the network for men, and they had all these male-centric shows. So it was a good fit for him at the time. I don't know if Paramount is going for something classier or more movie-themed. So that, I think, will be interesting to see how that plays out. But I think it would be a great move for him if it's able to happen.
Yeah, and the other part of that, too, is they're still going to own Bellator. I think Viacom actually owns Bellator at this point. So they're still going to have to put that spot, to put that Bellator show somewhere, you know, whether it's on Paramount or whether it's on one of their other Viacom networks, just like they did, you know, back in the day. I think Bellator and Impact now together could be, you know, a dual branding of a program that works. You know, you could have your, whatever you want to call it. You could have your combat sports night on whatever network, if it's Paramount or something else, where you have, you know, Impact that runs 8 to 10, and then you've got, you know, Bellator's greatest hits from 10 to 12 or something like that, because Bellator usually runs their live shows on Fridays. But you could do some type of Bellator theme show immediately following an Impact show, and that could fill up, you know, 4 hours of original programming on any given weeknight, which networks are certainly looking to fill. So, Kylan, what else you got for us this week?
And my second question for you guys, does it continue to bother you just as much as it bothers me that the X Division, even after 15 years, is still not clearly defined as to what the goal of even having an X Division is at all?
It frustrates me. Andrew, I'm sure it frustrates you too. From I know we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but they said it tonight. You know, what does No Limits mean? And no one even on the announce team seemed to have an answer for it. Andrew, what are your thoughts on the X Division as a whole and just the fact that it seems to be lacking any type of meaning or definition?
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating to watch. They during that show opening video of the past, they showed a lot of, like, cool X Division spots, and it's like there was, like, 3 good years of the X Division, and the rest has just been garbage. Great competitors, but they never, ever, ever cared about it. So I was really frustrated to see how they treated him tonight, and I wish they would, get their act together and treat it seriously.
And the thing, too, is this isn't even a new development with the X Division. This has sort of been a problem all along. I know I've heard Wade talk about this. I believe it was back when they first opened TNA. He had mentioned he had done an interview with Jerry Jarrett, who he was asking, Wade was asking, what is the X Division? And Jerry kept saying, it's No Limits. Well, what does that mean? You know, you could say it's No Limits, but someone tell me what that means. They've never really defined it well, I don't think. And I mean, they've always sort of made it just a cruiserweight division. But they could certainly do more to give it more definition and meaning, I think. Anything else, Kylan?
And my final question, with Cody Rhodes saying tonight that he would throw his Global Force Wrestling Next Generation title into the ring and challenge anybody to fight him for that, do you see this as a potential stepping stone to either change the X Division title into the Next Generation title, or as I previously proposed on this show a number of times, say after Slammiversary, do a full-fledged invasion angle or change the Impact brand into Global Force Wrestling, since Jeff has been supremely unable to acquire a television deal for Global Force.
That's a really good point, and I know back when we talked about this before, I don't think Andrew or I really were too high on an invasion angle happening or the show rebranding Global Force, just because Global Force didn't really have much weight, I guess you could say, in the market. But I didn't think that it would happen originally, Kylan, but they very specifically made sure that they mentioned that next-gen title twice, because Cody Rhodes was out with it twice on the show. And I'll be honest with you, at first, that opening segment, I wasn't quite sure what it was. I had forgotten that he was the next-gen champion, so I wasn't quite sure what it was. It looked like this green belt, and I was like, is that... You know, it almost looked like that X Division belt that they had for a while. It was green, and I wasn't quite sure what it was. But yeah, no, I thought it was really interesting that they had him carry out that belt, and they mentioned it, which is something they've never done before. Andrew, do you think that could lead to some more Global Force references, or perhaps even, you know, some type of merger of some kind?
Yeah, I could see that happening. I think Jeff Jarrett's going to want to keep pushing that forward and probably get a feud out of that. What really bugged me about that, among many things tonight, is that the announcers just assume everybody knows what that is. If you only watch TNA and aren't a huge internet fan, yeah, I mean, you haven't seen Global Force Wrestling in 2 years. I think a lot of people didn't know it existed. I had no idea Cody Rhodes had the belt, and I write about wrestling every day. So just bizarre from the announcers, a bizarre booking decision, but I do think they will proceed forward with some sort of Global Force Wrestling involvement in the company.
Especially too, Kylan, I know, I think we had mentioned this, that there was reports out last week that they've signed Magnus, who I believe is still the Global Force World Champion or the Heavyweight Champion. So we could see some more crossover there as well. It's possible we did at these tapings. Like I said, and I've said this before, we don't go ahead and read spoilers and talk about them on the show. So it's possible that they've already done some stuff with that that some of you already know about. We'll see it, obviously, as it airs. But we appreciate the phone call tonight, Kylan.
You are very welcome, Mike.
Talk to you next week.
I'll talk to you and Andrew next week.
Sounds good.
Sounds good. All right. Let's go to another quick break, and then we'll come back with more of your phone calls, because I see you guys lined up here. So we just got to take care of some business here. We'll go to another quick break and be back with more of your calls at 515-605-9345. Our second trivia question of the night, going into this break, on an early Wednesday night pay-per-view, which wrestler pulled out a gun on Jeff Jarrett as part of an angle? We'll be back with the answer to that and more of your phone calls on the other side of the break. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast.
Do you love pro wrestling, Torch? Then we've got another show just for you, Ring Rust Radio.
Ring Rust Radio breaks down the hottest topics and news from around the wrestling world, including WWE Raw, SmackDown, and pay-per-views, TNA, Lucha Underground, New Japan, and indie wrestling. Add in interviews with the biggest names in the industry, like Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Paul Heyman, Kurt Angle, and many more. And Ring Rust Radio has something for everyone.
Check out the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Interact with us on Twitter at Ring Rust Radio and email us at ringrustradio@yahoo.com.
All right, Andrew, back here on the PW Torch Livecast. Who was it that pulled out a gun on Jeff Jarrett and did their best Brian Pillman impression?
That legend was Puppet, probably best well known from Half Pint Brawlers. He was in the early days of TNA. I think it was their sixth episode ever, and I think I could be wrong, but I believe that was Vince Russo's first episode of booking the show.
I'm not gonna lie to you. I like the name. I mean, I didn't like much else about it, but I like the name. I did chuckle at the name Puppet. Oh, the good old days, right? Let's get back to your phone calls here on the Impact Post Show edition of the PW Torch Livecast. Damien in St. Louis, you're up next. Damien, how are you?
Doing just well, Mike and Andrew. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing good.
Pretty good. No complaints.
Well, that's great, man. First off, I want to say that I called several weeks back when you couldn't get me on the phone. I was pretty much sleeping. I was so bored with that episode of Impact that it just put me to sleep. But anywho, I did catch the whole show tonight. And let me just say, I am a little cautiously optimistic about the way it's going. I mean, they did the whole history of TNA at the beginning. And I really like how the production, you can tell that the production has had a little bit more of an upgrade, at least back to where it used to be, because Kevin Sullivan, not the Taskmaster, but the producer, he's back on the production team. And you can pretty much tell, you know, I can tell his production technique. And it really made it feel real special. Of course, and that opening was real sleek, you know, but it seems like the star of the show was the damn owl because it was the closing shot of the owl. Yeah, it was crazy. But anyway, I'm just like you guys. I really do not feel like there should be a three-man booth. They're pretty much doing the exact same thing that WWE is doing, just having a three-man booth. And Josh Matthews was just annoying as all hell. I'm like, dude, you're not even trying to be a good Michael Cole, you know, when he was here. It's just like, dude, just shut up. I mean, but other than that, I really do appreciate, I do like some of the things, but there was obviously some things that was a little bit questionable. I noticed you guys have not touched on the fact that Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards started out at the very beginning of the show fighting inside in the Impact Zone. What did you got? And then, of course, that whole little segment with Eddie Edwards doing the interview, then Angelina Love coming back and pretty much telling, just telling him Eddie off and then slapping him in the end. What did you guys think of that one?
That's a good point. I completely glossed over that when we ran down the show. I had forgot to put it down here in my rundown. But, yeah, no, you're right. They opened the show with a cold open right after that video, and it was just Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards brawling in the crowd. I thought that this was another good pull-apart, you know, and I'm glad that they finally put these guys back on the show. I mean, Andrew and I talked about it. I think it's been 2 weeks since they had their match and 2 weeks in a row where things got really, really intense between Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards, and then they just went missing for a couple of weeks without even really being referenced. So it was good to see them not only back on the show, but I thought opening the show like that with just cold, you know, right away, you cut right to the ring and there's a brawl going on. Nobody came out. There was no music. Nobody called anybody out. It was just boom, here we go. We're fighting right away. There's action right away. I did think that was a good way to set the tone for the show. Andrew, what did you think of that, about how they opened the show and then that little promo backstage later on between Angelina Love and Eddie Edwards?
I was relieved to see him put him on the show. Yeah, they were not mentioned at all the past couple weeks. I wish they would have put even more focus on it, but maybe that's just from a personal standpoint. I thought that's maybe one of the strongest feuds going in wrestling, and especially in TNA. But yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Just as a side note, that the video production values were a lot better tonight. Even just from a lighting perspective, a lot of times they've been like darkening the crowd so you can't see them.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see you could see the crowd, and for the most part, they look enthusiastic.
Yeah, no, I agree. Damien, that's a really good point about the production. I'm glad that you brought that up because I thought the building was lit better. Even something as simple as, you know, the barricade covers with the logo on it, I thought just gave the show some more color. It looked like it was lit differently, both the ring and the ramp, and the crowd was definitely lit different as well. So, yeah, no, I was a fan of all that stuff. And unfortunately, you know, we keep harping on the announcing, but I think that the announcing is what people are going to complain about from the show, and it's going to really throw a lot of shade on some of the good stuff that they were doing. And I think the production and things like that were definitely steps in the right direction, and it's getting overshadowed, you know, by how annoyed a lot of people were at the announce booth. Damien, yeah, no, what else did you have in your mind after watching this show?
Well, just to follow up on that, yes, the production just adds a little bit more of an energy to the show, so it was definitely well needed, but they do not need to have a three-man booth. Either stick with JD and Pope, or if you're insisting on having a heel commentator, take Pope out and just let it be JD and Josh. But then again, I don't know how many people would be receptive to that idea as well. A couple other things, too. The way that the Hardys have pretty much been poochied, Simpsons reference, out of this out of Impact Wrestling, pretty much to have DK have the tag team titles. I mean, it's kind of crazy. And of course, Crazy Steve just said, hey, thanks for the ride, boys. You know, a little acknowledgement saying thank you for your service. And I just feel like for as much as the Hardys have done for that company in the past year, I'm like, okay, this is the way they choose to let them write them off, really? I just really think they could have done a better job of doing that. I understand they perhaps wanted to burn off footage, but, you know, I just think it could have been a better way of doing that. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, especially, and again, we're only hearing one side of the story, but there were reports out last week where the Hardys even offered, like, hey, you know what, we'll come down, you're taping this week, we'll come down a day and we'll drop the titles to somebody and have it be a clean break. And people involved in management said no. I don't know why, you know, you wouldn't want to have them drop the titles in a match. I guess this type of ending is suitable given the type of storyline that they had, but I much would have preferred them, you know, just build up to a match, put them in the ring with Decay, have them, you know, they could have main evented one of these episodes with a big title match, make it a monstrous ball match, make whatever you want, you know, gimmick it up if you really want to. But yeah, I think it would have been better had they done the, and it sounds like they wanted to do the honors, you know, on the way out. It's not like they didn't want to. I think it would have been better to help another team if you were to just give them a win, a clean win, pass the titles on to somebody else, and then come up with something, you know, post-match that the Hardys disappear and can never be found. I mean, I think you could have done something where Decay beats them for the titles, and then as they're knocked out, you know, takes Vanguard 1 and somehow makes them teleport away, and she says that she's deleted them. Just the same thing you did here. You know, they've been deleted, and we deleted them and all this other stuff. You could have done the same thing, and that could have written them off and at least, you know, had them be pinned to win the title, to drop the titles, which sounds like it was something they wanted to do.
Yeah, I just didn't really care too much for it. But in any event, you know, I guess Hardys are doing what they're doing now in a Ring of Honor, and, you know, you can just hope for a success with them there. But anyway, I do think that, like I said, this first week out, Impact is going off to a nice little start. It's going to take a long time for them to be great. Like, Impact was never great. And I agree with Andrew earlier. Why would you want to remind people of the president of the United States currently? It just, and then, of course, Bobby Lashley making that reference, too. And one other point I wanted to make before I go, I really do believe that, okay, WWE does not mention TNA by name. They go out of their way to not even mention anything related to TNA. So why does TNA feel the need to mention, give WWE references all over the show? That's pretty much all I have, guys. Thanks a lot.
Hey, Demon, we appreciate the phone call. Yeah, I mean, we talked about some of the references earlier on. I think in certain areas it's okay. I think maybe they overdid it a little bit. But I think even, Andrew, you were saying, you know, especially at least in the case of Alberto Del Rio, to build up what he's done in his past, those references can be okay. They did seem to do it a lot, though. I mean, I'd like to go back. Well, let me rephrase it. I don't want to go back and watch the show again because I probably throw something in my television. But I would be interested in how many times they actually made WWE references, because it wasn't just with Del Rio. It was a lot on the show. I mean, at one point, they even referenced that Paige, I think, was either backstage or that at least that she was engaged to Del Rio. So, I mean, there was definitely a lot of references on this show, for sure.
Yeah, just kind of like thinking back, it's probably the most they've ever done since the Voodoo Kid Mafia was around and Billy Gunn and Road Dogg were challenging Vince McMahon and Hunter to a fight on a weekly basis. So I don't know if they're trying to take more digs perhaps in the future or if this was just kind of a one-night thing.
It's kind of crazy now to see Road Dogg is maybe, you know, when WWE is under Triple H control, Road Dogg might be the number two guy in charge there. especially, you know, when you look at some of the stuff they did back there in TNA. Let's go to our next caller. It's area code 334. 334, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey guys, this is Carl from Troy, Alabama.
Hey Carl, how you doing?
Doing great. Do you guys every week, you know, you guys do this week in and week out, do you ever get sick of these folks calling in and with nothing else to say, they come in with that great tagline, "How you guys doing this week?"
You know, it is. I want to know how everybody's doing. So,
yeah, well, only so many times in a show that you guys can say to somebody, "Doing great." Before, you know, let's get, you know, put it on the call in queue or something. We're doing great, guys. Have your questions ready. And
yeah, I tell you, I guess it's possible our mood could change, you know, within a few minutes. So.
Well, you know what? Maybe I've just been influenced by Josh Matthews and I want to be a heel or something. I don't know. But, I tell you, I'm willing to give the show tonight a C-plus or maybe even a B-minus rating, but the majority of that is because of the announcing, like you guys have talked about, was so atrocious. You talked about the Michael Cole angle. I can take you back to the early 1990s with a three-man booth on Wrestling Challenge with the WWE, Gorilla Monsoon, Bobby Heenan, and Tony Schiavone. And it's never been a dynamic that has worked out well for the business.
Completely agree. Not only is it too many voices, I mean, take the Josh Matthews heel thing aside and take that out of it, it's too many voices. You know, I totally agree with you. It's too confusing.
Absolutely.
It's one of the things that drives me crazy about SmackDown, too. I mean, they even referenced, I think Josh Matthews referenced, oh, what is a SmackDown? We're going to have 47 announcers. But, I mean, you're one short. I mean, at this point, I wanted them to see, I would have preferred them to see, I would have preferred them completely change the voice of the show. And that's, you know, not that I want to see anybody lose their job, but get rid of Josh Matthews. Get rid of Pope. Go in a completely new direction. Change up the voice altogether. And
sometimes
that,
people deserve to lose their job.
God, I mean, what?
That's
what we
the
got
thing.
Was just
even JB
to
tonight, Borash tonight, as the guy that was supposed to come in as the face, he sounded like a heel most of the time. But
that's one of the things that drove me crazy too. Yeah, I mean, and Andrew, I think we were talking about it earlier. Even when he was trying to be the babyface and clash with Josh Matthews, it's just the incessant yelling just drove me nuts. And Andrew, I mean, that's sort of what we were talking about earlier, just the fact that they were fighting the whole time and overshadowed other things that were going on in the show.
It definitely did. And I tell you, it tonight had an influence. You could see Dutch Mantel in there For those of us from the Southeast, there's an influence from the old Continental Championship Wrestling or Georgia Championship Wrestling days. You can tell there's that influence coming in there, but I don't have a problem with them talking about the WWE because I think it says, hey, guys, we're coming after you, and it puts people on notice.
Yeah, I mean, I think it works, you know, in certain instances. I don't think you need to do it 20 times a show, but
no.
Especially when you have a guy that's a former champion in their company. I mean, like I said, what we were saying earlier, you know, in the mid-90s, you would have ignored that, and it was taboo to talk about it. It changed a little bit with Eric Bischoff when he started just giving away results on Nitro. But, I mean, we know what exists. You know, the 300,000 to 400,000 people that are watching Impact all know that WWE exists. They all know where Alberto El Patron came from. So why not own it? Why not acknowledge it? Why not say, hey, this guy's a former world champion and we have him now? I think it makes him feel a little bit like a bigger star.
Definitely. Well, I appreciate what you guys are doing and enjoying the show. Look forward to talking with you again soon.
Sounds good. Hey, we appreciate the phone call.
Take care.
You too. All right. We got a little more time here before we got to go to our last break. So let's go to Michael in Virginia. Michael in Virginia, you're up next on the PW Torch Livecast.
Hey, guys. I completely agree with your last caller, and that's why I never ask how you're doing because I heard it when you opened the show. So,
Well, I'm still doing good anyway.
Yeah,
right.
Pretty good.
Yeah,
pretty good.
First, I got my show notes, and then I have a few points I want to touch on, if I may. I agreed with you all 100% on the commentary. I just want to know, how does Jim Ross and Mike Tenay feel about their name being dropped with that mess that followed? It was ridiculous.
Yeah. I know he's being the heel. I especially thought it was interesting that Josh Matthews brought up, I was mentored by Jim Ross, especially if you remember, like 2 years ago, there was a little bit of a thing there on Twitter where Josh Matthews was running down how old JR was. And this wasn't when he was a heel. I think this is just Josh being Josh and how he might really be of a really, I mean, for lack of a better term, being a real arrogant jerk about how old Jim Ross was and how out of touch he was. He went on a Twitter rant, I think it was about 2 or 3 years ago.
I agree with you completely over the use or overuse of WWE references. I personally like references to other organizations and seeing titles from other companies on television. You know, we're not living in a bubble like WWE. It's better than WWE on television saying they've been all around the world. You know, just acknowledge who and what you have. And, you know, they did a good job of acknowledging their history tonight, which, you know, they weren't lying about. That's where these guys have been, and that's that. As far as the X division goes, Kylan stole my thunder on that, on the defined as no limits. They still didn't, they hadn't done it in 15 years, and I don't think it'll ever happen. One of the most ridiculous things that Pope said tonight at the start of that match was DJZ is the modern Ricky Steamboat. I don't know how he would draw
that
conclusion.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, I missed that too.
I'd be curious to know. Yeah.
I missed that. Yeah, that's a funny one. That sort of sums up the commentary, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, and then the other one later in the show when clearly when one of them got thrown in the table in the main event and Josh Matthews said, the table just moved 3 feet, but we clearly saw the table did not even move. I was just,
yeah,
that was Josh's.
I did hear that. Yeah, I did hear that, unfortunately.
I'm optimistic to see Bruce and Dutch back. You know, when Bruce come out and he says TNA is dead and gave that promo, the thing that hit me right in the face is when he called out when Lashley came out, and then they pan in on him and you see that great big TNA logo on the title. And then in the main event, when the referee's presenting the belt to the camera, they get a very close shot of the belt. They definitely need new titles. Hopefully that comes sooner than later.
Yeah, you know what? That's a good point. And one I didn't even realize. Yeah, that's an excellent point. They just go through this whole thing about how the TNA name is dead and its impact now, and then what do you get? A big close-up of a TNA title. Andrew, imagine, I imagine that you would too, Andrew, that they're going to end up going with new titles here at some point?
I would assume so, yeah. I did not even catch that, but that's a good call on that. Yeah, pretty ridiculous.
So I don't know how.
I mean, I guess you could.
I've watched.
I guess you could. I guess you can make the rationale and make the argument that, hey, you know, this is Bruce Pritchard's a new authority figure. He just made this decision today. We didn't have time to make, you know, new titles, I guess. But, yeah, no, I would have – it would have been nice had they come out with something new there. Really, you know, go all in with the rebrand right away instead of having that little bit of holdover.
Well, maybe that's a good point, because then how would the – you know, TNA is dead. I just declared that, and then, oh, look, we had already made new belts. Kind of might be a little good for the storyline, but – moving on, did you all have an MMA like infomercial right before the main event?
I don't believe I did. Did you?
No. I keep thinking the old lady who did the knee brace one.
What was that?
I keep seeing a commercial for an old lady who needs a knee brace that shows up like 5 times on Impact.
Well, the way I watch the show is I don't have Pop TV, so I watch it on a streaming, online, and it's like the Fight Network logo's up in the corner. And when they went into the main, they said that was our last commercial break. There was this huge, long MMA, like, infomercial that I was seriously about to, like, start texting people asking, is my feed, like, off or something, or are we still, is Impact even still on? Because it was an inordinate amount of time, and I just thought it killed, for me watching, it killed all the momentum of that title match. I don't know if that's how it comes across on the true Pop TV station or not.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing anything like that. You know, I wonder, there's a Fight Network logo up on your screen. It could be you know, I know that they stream through the app in the UK, and I believe it streams live as it airs on Pop, so it could be that was streaming through their own app service. And that would make sense, too, because you know, they carry a lot of MMA, so perhaps they were trying to, you know, build up something else they have streaming on the Fight app. But, at least on my cable network, it was just a regular commercial break that was probably, you know, in the range of maybe 4 minutes or so. And it, I mean, it just felt like a normal break.
Okay. See, I have to use like a bootleg version because there's no other way for me to get it. But that's how it came across to me.
Yeah.
It just killed a lot of momentum. So with that being said, on the version of what I saw, immediately when Impact, this is my last note, and then I have a point on the Hardys. Immediately when Impact went off the air, what did they cut to on the Fight Network? Maybe it was that app, like you said. TNA's greatest wrestling matches. Featuring Austin Aries versus Jeff Hardy from 2012, Bobby Roode versus Jeff Hardy from 2012, and then Kurt Angle versus, guess who, Jeff Hardy from 2012. I just thought, we just saw Impact Wrestling, TNA is dead, and then the Fight Network, I guess it was them. Here's TNA's greatest matches.
Or Jeff Hardy's greatest matches.
Right,
exactly. That's a good point. You know, again, I imagine we'll see them rebrand that totally here at some point. I would hope so, anyway.
Yeah, I hope so. My ultimate takeaway is that, you know, we're rebranding, TNA's dead, but the analogy I have is, like, we have this brand-new sparkling SUV that's all packed up, and we're going, you know, we're going down the road on a new journey, but we're still pulling that trailer with all that old TNA stuff lingering, and I'm really optimistic about the direction. They have a lot of momentum on social media during the tapings when the spoilers are released. But you really only have the hardcore people left that are watching week to week, and you're trying to draw in the old fans and bring them back. But you only have a few minutes, I would say, at the openers to hook them and keep them. And I don't know if they accomplished that tonight. Your thoughts, and then I want to point out one quick point on the Hardys.
Yeah, you know, one thing I thought at the end of the show is that they both began and ended the show with a little bit of chaos. You had the Eddie Edwards, Davey Richards segment to right at the beginning of the show where they're just fighting all over the building, and then you had the confusion and the chaos over what happened in the main event. Is there going to be a ruling? And they just ran out of time and went off the air. Andrew, what were your thoughts on, you know, do you think they hooked enough of an audience, maybe especially at the end, that it's going to make people want to come back next week and maybe help grow that viewership number a little bit?
Well, we kind of talked before about, like, Del Rio starting the show would have been better. I think that would have been great to just be like, oh, my God, what is Del Rio doing here? As opposed to Jeremy Borash. You know, they had the Eddie Edwards and the Davey Richards fight, but I think you want something fresh, something new, and then they went right into Jeremy Borash yelling at Josh Matthews for 5 minutes. So I think it started out pretty mediocre, but I thought it ended with a good enough of a hook of how this is going to go forward with EC3 and Lashley and Del Rio.
On the point of the Hardys.
You got a point on the Hardys there?
Yeah, it's like a social media tidbit I always seem to find. Sent out tonight, he said, if the Anthem Owlmen, hashtag, do not air tonight's Expedition of Gold, Vanguard 1 will procure the CWF video footage, and I'll broadcast it tonight. Somebody later sent to Matt how they were displeased with the Hardys are written off Impact by teleporting. Decay appears instead and picks up the tag team titles. Matt responds, what is this chicanery? This was during the show. No being can teleport without being in direct contact with the incomparable Vanguard 1, Anthem Owlmen. And then somebody says to him, so we're led to believe that Vanguard 1 somehow teleported Matt and Jeff and left the tag titles behind. Matt responds, as always, I will bring light. I have asked Vanguard 1 to upload the actual footage from the CWF Mid-Atlantic that I think Bruce Mitchell speaks of so highly. And then he says, en route. So hopefully we will tune in to Matt Hardy's, the Matt Hardy brand, and we'll see if it comes to light. And also, as one final note, what would you name the owl? I'm sure you saw they have a contest going on.
Oh, Andrew and I were emailing about this earlier.
That's all I have for tonight.
All right, Michael. Hey, we appreciate the call.
Yep.
Andrew, I haven't thought of a name for the owl yet. Do you have a name for the owl? What should we name the owl?
I would name it Cheeks in honor of the wrestler from the first episode who broke the ring on him in TNA, if you recall him.
Yeah.
Yep, Cheeks the owl.
I like it. So for now, you know what? I don't care what they name the owl. That's what we're calling the owl. Here on the PW podcast, that is the official name of the owl.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, I emailed you before because they have that new website up, and the number one thing on the site is what should we name the owl? Like, over everything. I don't know.
Well, I mean, that's a very big, important decision.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other thing that was interesting, I saw the new website up earlier, and I don't know if it's just me, but now when I go to ImpactWrestling.com, it brings me to the old website again. So I'm not quite sure what happened.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I looked at it before the show. It showed up on mine, but
yeah, no, it's got the old design back up again with results from tonight's show, March 9th. So I don't know exactly what happened there. I know, their website has been bad for a really long time, and I mean, this is a story that I heard from somebody that would know back maybe 8 or 9 months ago that their website, they still owned, this is under previous ownership, of course, they still owned the domain name, but everything on the back end was being handled by somebody else, and they sort of got locked out of that. No one really knew why. I'm sort of freestyling a guess here that it may have been whoever was handling their website, they weren't paying. Because it seems like they weren't paying other people either. And then all of a sudden the website changed to that very weird, like, WordPress style theme, which wasn't even filled out all the way. And there were, you know, holes and things missing and no roster page. And that just really bad website they've had now for the last couple of months. But it seems like their original website, from what I was told, the old ownership, while still owning the domain, may have been left out in the dark on. Anyway, let's get to our three things we liked about the show before we get out of here for this week. Andrew, what was the number three thing you liked about this episode of Impact?
I'm kind of reaching here. Although I'm doing some random stuff, so I'm going to go number three. I'm going to go the DCC had new masks on. I liked the look of it. It was creepy. I thought they were going to repackage them a little bit, maybe give them a little something, because a lot of people in the crowd were wearing them. And then they jobs pretty decisively, but I like the new look they had going.
My number three thing, this has been brought up a couple times. I liked that Bobby Lashley brought up that he fought for Donald Trump, not because I think it's good for a babyface to do that, but Bobby Lashley is a babyface. He's a heel, and not many people like Donald Trump. And I think it's a smart decision for your heel to bring up that, hey, he once fought for the president of the United States. I thought that that was a pretty, you know, I don't like make impact great. I think that that's not the best way to go about doing things and ripping off that phrase. But I was okay with Bobby Lashley, you know, bringing up that he fought for Donald Trump, considering he's a heel. I mean, that's, you know, he should bring up something like that.
I agree. Like, I knew he did that, but like hearing him say that just made it so much weirder, like that actually happened.
At first, I wasn't quite sure what he meant, because I think he said, I've represented the president of the United States. And I thought to myself, took me a second. I'm like, in what? Like, what did he represent the president for? Like, I couldn't remember. It just baffled me for the first couple of seconds. After about 10 seconds, I got it. I was like, oh, that's right. He had Donald Trump in his corner. What was the number two thing that you had, the three things you liked about this show?
Number two, this kind of cracked me up in a weird way for some reason, but Laurel Van Ness still wearing her wedding dress. Just the thought of her wearing that, I don't know, for couple weeks now. And just, she looks psychotic. Like, she looks scary, like somebody out of a horror film. I dug the visual of it. It kind of made me laugh, and then it kind of scared me a bit. So that's my number two tonight.
Me too. No, that's I like that a lot. It made me think that, you know, hey, she could have a spot in Decay, maybe. That just the makeup smeared all over her face. I thought that was a good visual. And I remember, I think I even wrote in the report in my live Impact report that she looked like a character out of a horror movie.
Nice.
The number two thing that I liked about this show, I liked Sienna's promo, not because she said that Maria was had a nervous breakdown. I mean, that's how they're going to write her off the show. But I thought it was a good way to keep Allie involved with that group, and she's got some conflict now with Sienna. But this was also the first time we really heard Sienna cut a promo. I mean, Maria, for a long time, was doing her talking. She'd have a little bit of lines here and there, but, you know, backstage, I thought she played a good job as the heel against Mackenzie Mitchell, you know, the babyface announcer, and I thought this was a good opportunity for her to showcase what she can do from a promo standpoint.
I agree. In most segments, she's been reduced to one or two lines and, you know, getting prepared for the wedding. But she showed that she can that she has some decent abilities on her own, and she should be given more opportunities to talk, definitely in the future, especially since Maria's gone.
What did you have as the number one thing you liked about this show?
Number one, so we kind of talked about this in different ways, just saying how they wrote the Hardys out of the show, but I'm going to say just the fact that they gave Maria an out. You know, just as a lifelong wrestling fan, it's always driven me crazy when people disappear with no explanation, whether it was the Ultimate Warrior many years ago or newer wrestlers, but they just disappear and they pretend like it never happened, because no other show in all of entertainment gets away with that except wrestling. So I like that they said she had a nervous breakdown, she's gone, and it kind of leaves the door open for, hey, if they, get back together and work out a deal, she could come back. So that was the thing I liked the most, just a little bit of closure.
Absolutely. No, I totally agree. The number one thing that I had I liked about the show was that opening montage. I mean, we talked about earlier in the show, they highlighted a lot of TNA's history. I know I've said it on the show in the past, some people might look at what they're doing with Jeff Jarrett and talking about the history of TNA as taking a step backwards. I've said it for a while. I think they were so far off course that you need to take a step backwards to get back on course before you can move forward again. So I like the opening video. I like that they reminded you a little bit of, hey, this place used to be pretty cool, you know, with guys like Kurt Angle, and just the visual of some of those matches, the visual of what the show used to look like, the size of some of their crowds, I thought was really well done. And I thought it reminded you, like, hey, this place used to be pretty great. I mean, I can think of, I think it was Lockdown in 2008. I think it was 2008. Samoa Joe and Kurt Angle in the cage. That was up here in Lowell, Massachusetts. I went to that show. there was probably 5,000 people in that building. I mean, it was packed. It was jammed.
Wow.
And it was a really fun environment. And I don't know if that was one of the clips. It was a quick, really quick clip of an arena that looked like it was pretty full. And it, that's what it brought me back to. Like, hey, I remember sitting in the crowd for that show and just what a cool environment it was. And, you know, the I don't think they could have they couldn't draw a crowd like that now, but, you know, it reminded you like, hey, this place, they used to have more than a million people watching. And ideally, you know, you don't want to remind people about that stuff without having a plan to get back there. And I hope that they have a plan in place to try to get themselves back to that again, because that could be real competition for WWE. I think that they were, you know, back that 2007, 2008 range, they were on their way to perhaps being legitimate competition, and then, you know, this thing fell off the rails big time.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm glad you mentioned that. I brought it up again. It's probably the best video they've produced in years, because for me, it's the only video that got me excited for the promotion. You have to walk a fine line with that, because, you know, when you show Sting and Angle and AJ, you might go, "Oh man, I miss those guys." But then you could also think, maybe they're going to create the next set of, you know, AJs and Stings or whatever. So, yeah, it got me excited for the show. Probably, yeah, my favorite part of the show. And then it was quickly downhill as soon as Josh started talking. But it got things off to a really good start.
All right, Andrew, anything else to add before we get out of here for this week?
I don't think so. The last 2 weeks, I asked you if they talked about Eddie and Davey, but they did tonight. So I think they closed that loophole.
For now, anyway. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Impact Postgame Show. Bruce Mitchell will be back tomorrow for the primetime edition of the PW Torch Livecast. On Monday, Wade Keller hosts the Raw Postgame Show. On Tuesday, Wade hosts the SmackDown Postgame Show. Wednesday, it's the midweek flagship in the afternoon. Thursday, Wade will have Interview Thursday in the afternoon. And then Thursday night, Andrew and I will be back here on the Impact post-game show edition of the PW Torch Livecast. So we'll be back next week, 10 p.m. Eastern, right as Impact goes off the air. Before we get out of here for this week, though, I want you to listen a little bit about PW Torch VIP. If you're listening to this show, I guarantee you will love pwtorch.com VIP. Here's what you get with VIP. Here's what VIP is all about. And Andrew and I will talk to you next week back here on the PW Torch Livecast Impact Postgame Show.
If you're a fan of the PW Torch Livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch Livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com. And that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. It takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip.